Welcome to the J3 University Podcast. I'm your host, John Jewett.
And I'm your co-host, Luke Miller.
Our mission is to elevate the physique coaching standard
and deliver the highest level of competitors to the stage.
Let's jump into today's episode. Estrogen control and using Masteron, just estrogen in general, where do you find the sweet spot? And so estrogen's been almost demonized as the anti-male hormone, but in reality, it's every bit of a male hormone as it is a female hormone with lots of beneficial effects. Also, there can be negative effects as well. It's all about having what we try to find, the right sweet spot. So what we did was take some questions from you, and we're going to answer three of those today surrounding estrogen, some around using Masteron, cruise phases, and then what to do around lab work. So we'll dive into this topic today, get you some answers around what to do with managing estrogen.
Yeah, this is a great topic because I think there's you find multiple ways to skin a cat with this topic and ways that different coaches choose to go about doing this as far as managing E2 with escalated PED use. And while the end goal might be similar, the way in which you go about that and the long-term detriment might be different. And so this is a great topic to bring up as far as just optimizing PED stack design, in my opinion. And I think the first question is just a great start point for us. And that question is using Masteron to control E2 safer than using an AI? And I think we can go ahead and lump AI and CIRMs into this conversation, right? And just make sure that we kind of cover that basis.
Yeah, they differentiate in a certain degree, but for the simplicity of conversation, we could just put them into the same category because you could get into just some of the CIRMs actually act as weak estrogen agonist on the receptors. And then also, if we're talking about there's different estrogen receptor alpha and beta and how those influence those. And it can get very overly complicated as well going down that path. While more with the AI, you're just in general having an overall reduction of estrogen when some of the CIRMs might be even more tissue selective,
right?
Whether it be to bone or to breast. So that's a big, big conversation and gets very nuanced and probably way above our heads too, if you go down that strain of line of research. But we could lump them into just, you know, lowering estrogen by means of like a pharmaceutical, like an AI or a CIRM, and then having the aspect around, you know, bringing in another androgen like Masteron to lower estrogen or offset the impacts of estrogen. And what we're really looking at here, if you scaled back, is an androgen to estrogen ratio, and is one more health deleterious than the other, whether it be you raise up androgens to offset estrogen and you keep testosterone lower so it's not aromatizing as much, and you're filling in that milligram amount of androgen need through another androgen that's not testosterone, right? Versus have testosterone at X amount and bring in the AI to then lower that aromatization. So end of day, if we had a similar setup, right, it's an androgen to estrogen ratio that is identical with some test and some Masteron versus some testosterone and an AI, which is going to be more risk? And I cannot have an answer directly for that because there is no studies around this. I think end of day, the big picture is that what we see is when you start skewing androgen to estrogen ratios in either direction, whether that goes really high androgens and normal estrogens or normal androgens and low estrogen, that's when we see pathology occur.
Yes.
So you could have all the aspects we talk about, dangers around PED usage, whether it be, you know, cardiovascular or brain or kidney, skewing those ratios, what is beyond what is physiological normal for you is what's going to pose more of the risk. So whether that is brought in through bringing in another androgen or bring in an AI, both could have the same degree of health risk. I think what we bring in more of the fact is probably the actual practical application of these items, right? Which you could bring up, well, where are your sourcing of your AI? Because if you had someone that, say, is getting all farm-grade testosterone and a aromatase inhibitor, and there it's guaranteed what you get is what you get, versus someone that, because your only way you're going to source Masteron is Black underground. Market. Yeah. So then you have to question, well, what about dosing accuracy? What about product reliability? Hell, you could even get into, what about carrier oils, synthetic versus organic? You know, what about the risk around that? So in a certain situation, the Masteron testosterone combination could present a greater risk than the testosterone and AI combination. Mm-hmm. Now, that's what I would weigh first. Like, reliability of your product is always what matters the most. If you're talking simply from a TRT means, I do think that we could not have to use an AI if you are relying on staying within what is normal for your physiology. And I think where you really need to get into is probably, if you're running into issues around estrogen, that it might be more of your application of how you're using testosterone with the type of ester, the frequency of administration, the place of administration, whether it be sub-Q or intramuscular, and then also the environment that you're using these drugs in. And by environment, I mean, what's your health status like? Because if you have more insulin resistance and inflammation, we see a greater degree of aromatization of testosterone to estrogen. So it might be, hey, rather than throwing another drug in to fix your issue, maybe it's the environment you need to be fixing and lowering body fat and using, you know, nutrition properly and everything that goes along with proper health, sleep, stress management, and that's going to be a good estrogen management tool for you versus using the AI. So long story short of just rambling, because it is kind of this ramble in this kind of gray area. We're not giving you a direct black and white answer, because there's not a black and white answer to this. And it's just one that it does depend. And it's also depend on your individual response. Cause we do have cases, right, Luke, where you have someone on a certain amount of testosterone, you try to bring in a bunch of Masteron, and it's still not quite enough to offset estrogen like an AI would. Now, the thing to that is, like, we'll just lower testosterone down. And that is one case to do it. Did you have something else to add around that?
Yeah, no, I think it's, I think the one thing that I do find is people who are operating more in black market access. So like AI is black market and Masteron is black market. Potentially more predictability with test Masteron ratios that have been found throughout the process of coaching, creating a more predictable environment across the longer term phases for me, in that I have less of an incidence of side effects and or tanking estradiol with keeping the androgen to estrogen ratio where it should be, or where it would be ideal for that athlete to kind of mitigate risk, using the androgen to offset and just bringing that test down to a place that's a little bit more tolerable with that Masteron in play. I will say that is the direction that I tend to head, just from stability and predictability, because there's also the client adherence portion of this. How many people forget their AI dosing, right? Oh, I just forgot to take it, you know, a couple times this week, or whatever the dosing may be. I forgot to take it, you know, once or twice of those administrations I'm supposed to be. So, from a client predictability standpoint, that's where I also tend to lean towards that. People most of the time don't forget their shots. They're more likely to forget their like pills and things like that. So I do tend to lean towards that from a client adherence standpoint. Unless the case situation you brought up of like pharmaceutical grade, everything from a clinic, avoiding black market drugs, then you're kind of the only way you're going is that direction.
And you bring up a good point too, because you have different pharmacokinetic profiles occurring when you're using whichever testosterone ester you're using, and in AI, whichever one you're using for that, whether it be exemestane or anastrozole. So those have different half-lives. So you might see a rise in, you know, inhibition of aromatase and then a drop off with how you're dosing. So some people just take anastrozole like twice a week. And so you might, you know, knock down estradiol one day, then it's going to rise back up some. While how are you administering your testosterone? Is that once a week? Is that every single day? So you can create a lot more hormonal imbalance with that scheme potentially. And we see a lot of the hormonal imbalance is also what drives a lot of the issues with individuals having problems around acne or even mood. So the greater hormone stability might be the less risky aspect, which I would definitely agree with. And to your point also, like using just masteron and testosterone together in creating that environment, you leave alone aromatase, which intracellular aromatase is like a fail-safe for the body's own trying to manage that androgen to estrogen ratio and protect the body. So you, by lowering aromatase and removing that ability to naturally skew androgens to estrogens, could bring more risk about. So there is that potential there. So I do lean into that camp as well. And I know we're like picking on masteron, or pushing masteron, whatever you want to say. But just so you know, like every androgen will have this component to it. Just testosterone used to be used for treatment for advanced breast cancer because it has raising that androgens to estrogen, and same with primobolan or, you know, in any other non-aromatizing drug, any other steroid for that matter, whether it be trenbolone or nandrolone, all would have some capacity to have some potential competitive binding with aromatase and could lower estradiol in turn.
Yeah, I think we typically just from a limitation of all side action is why we typically bring up masteron and or primo, which you made a fabulous post about masteron versus primo the other day. If you haven't seen it, you should go check it out. But on the endogenicity of those profiles, right? But I think it's more just the predictability side of it for me, where from a client adherence standpoint, it's both are feasible ways of doing it, which is why I brought up in the initial conversation of like, hey, there's multiple ways to skin this cat, right? But from an anecdotal coaching perspective and how clients are actually applying it, I tend to find it's a bit more predictable when I do it that way.
Yeah, and you know, it's an interesting thing to bring up is that if you had testosterone in the AI and you block aromatase, you might send more testosterone down the DHT path.
Yep.
It's a possibility. Now with like the masteron testosterone combination, that might not be as much potential there because you still might have some aromatization occurring. However, the androgens are now offsetting that some, and even masteron would have some competitiveness with 5-alpha reductase to not bring about as much DHT. So if someone has issues around DHT, that also might be a better combination. So truly comes down to the individual's response. But from what we've seen, that combination, masteron or primo or testosterone, whatever it may be, is a very viable way to manage that.
Now, I think that strings us into the second question, because the second question is when to use masteron during cruise phases or periods between all seasons and prep. And there is a large discussion of risk profile here that I think we can probably shorten into as much of a 2-minute stint as we possibly can, in that your androgen need on bridge phases largely dictates the need of masteron within that phase.
That would sum that up in one sentence, yeah.
And I think that then starts to dive into like, now you're just doing the same thing you do with superphysiological implantation, in that whatever that need is, you're trying to max the test dose within that, and then you're just using masteron to cover the rest of that milligram need, For your beginners and or intermediates, a lot of times that's just going to be tests where Masteron is not going to be needed. As you start to get into upper levels of intermediate and advanced, that milligram need is going to be higher, and they might not be able to manage that test dose without offsetting that with some Masteron.
Right. And so with finding that, so when you have the total milligram amount, right? So whether that, and how are you gauging what is enough during a cruise period? Because once you stop an escalation phase, you're on whatever, let's call it 1,000 milligrams of anabolic steroids. You have a certain amount of weeks as that levels are declining based on the esters, right? So which might be 4 weeks. So the first 4 weeks that you plan this cruise TRT phase, whatever you want to call it, you're still at super physiological levels.
Yep.
In some point, you'll hit more of a baseline. And when you're at that baseline of usage, we can look at your gym performance. Mm-hmm. And are you able to maintain, relatively maintain gym performance? And if so, then that's a good milligram total for a maintenance level. And what you do have to accept is visuals are going to change a bit during that phase. So I wouldn't completely go off visuals, because the initial pull down, you might lose some fullness and you might see a little bit of softness come through. We have to accept some of that to a degree based on the how vast your difference is in a push up to what will maintain you. But the main thing I would be going off of would be gym performance. Mm-hmm. And like Luke brought up, you have to weigh in, you know, your risk profile, because if you're someone that's not trying to go onto the Olympia stage, then we don't need to accept a higher usage amount to maintain that gym performance when we need to be correcting health markers, for one thing. Like, say your push phase, you start to see some health marker skewing and you have to sacrifice, well, if I keep my dosage higher, I'll maintain my gym performance and tissue. However, I'm not going to be correcting as much of these health marker metrics that decreased. You might need to sacrifice some of the performance so you can improve those health metrics. But that comes down to like where you lie on that risk profile. And so that might dictate some of the response of should you use more androgen or not, not just on gym performance, but also your health markers as well. And then through within what is that milligram total amount, we still would utilize testosterone as a base. For some people, testosterone is going to be more than enough to maintain that tissue without further need of more androgen. And then the question we just answered about the Masteron to testosterone ratio, that comes down to managing estrogen. And so at some point, if you have a higher enough milligram total in that cruise phase, you might need some Masteron because you just simply can't tolerate more testosterone based around the estrogen and DHT components to it. So should you always be using Masteron cruise? No, some people don't. You could just only use testosterone during that phase.
Yeah, I bring up the risk profile portion of that conversation because in the higher echelon athlete accepting the higher risk, you're not really... I don't want to say you're not ever really seeing baseline, but like by the time everything phases out, you're almost turning right back around and going to the next phase, depending on what their timetable is. And so you're more so just trying to manage it from keeping them strung along from a tissue retention standpoint, because that's the priority in the higher risk, and mitigating risk as much as possible. So that higher risk athlete is a very different scope or look into that bridge phase than, like you said, the person not in the Olympia stage. Just because the sheer amount of usage, when you're pulling back, you're really almost never dipping below super physiological compound use.
Yeah, and I think people have kind of criticized certain things. It gets into semantics of like cruising and like the idea of blast cruise. Like, we understand the concept. Like, there's going to be phases of the year with escalated usage based on the need. And that's really what it is that it's needs-based usage around the contest year. Mm-hmm. So during a cruise, some people are like, oh, that's TRT. Well, for a lot of us, it's not TRT. It's just a continuation of cycle lowering and raising based on the need. And so you'll have parts of the year where that's going to come lower when you're in a maintenance phase, in a fat loss phase that might escalate up some more, than in a growth phase that might go even higher. And then it's just scaling up and down and waving throughout that. And there's lots of individuals that won't even touch a physiological norm in that phase. However, it would probably be a really, really good idea to for most people that aren't trying to do this for a career and at a high level.
Agreed. Agreed. Yeah, it's like wave loading programming for PEDs.
Wave loading. Oh my gosh. we're going to create the next ebook. PED wave loading. What is this? I just have to buy the book. Then it's just like, this looks a lot like Blast Cruise or escalation, de-escalation, or whatever the hell you want to call it. It's the same stuff. Don't get caught up on the words. Just understand, everyone, the application of using a dose based on your need for your phase. It's as simple as that. Hopefully that's not too convoluted a way to say it too, but
yeah. So this is a great question, and I think I'm about to put you on a soapbox. So I'm going to just tee it up and let you roll. How do we find the estrogen sweet spot and maintain it when we know some like issues with sensitivity and estradiol testing, and we can't really fully rely on that. And you kind of cross that with, you know, cross reactivity in this testing, and it's like, what am I looking at? Like, how do I find the sweet spot?
Yeah, Luke and I had a few questions pop up in the J3U forums around, you know, people sharing their lab work, and they're like, on X, like 200 milligrams of testosterone, my estrogen is higher than when I'm on 400 milligrams of testosterone. Like, how does this make any sense? And they're trying to, you know, make sense of these numbers. And of course, we go down asking, like, well, what about shot administration? Like, did that change? Did your source change? Did the lab you're using change? Sites of administration change? There's just so many variables and of how you're using compounds. And that's one thing. Then also the environment that you're using them in. Environment, but I mean, it should say just phase, to be clear. Because say this person is now 6 months down the road in off season and more body fat, it absolutely could change the amount of estrogen that they have present versus their leaner counterpart. And then we also have like just error within labs. And so if you have a lab that's, if it's not like an ultra sensitive estradiol test, just a general, like usually it's gas chromatography test, has a lot of variability in it. And it varies. So it could be up to 20% in some studies that I was coming across, which 20% is a huge difference when we're measuring levels that are just in the tens, right? So a normal male range be 30 to 50 picogram per mil. So if you have a 20% variance in that, say that person's now at a 60 versus a 40, but they're actually at 40 and in their lab saying 60, how meaningful is that? And then compared with all these other variables that could be skewed around it. And so we have people that look at their estrogen number and they want to treat the number versus just treating the person. The other thing you brought up, Luke, was cross reactivity. And the problem with not using like an HPLC or this ultra sensitive estradiol test is that it could pick up other similar compounds. And we've seen it a lot with trimbolone. Trimbolone will pop up as being an estradiol on lab work. I remember a guy, he sent me his labs to look at because he was freaking out. He was like 2 weeks from his show and estrogen was off the chart. It was like in the 200s. He's like, I'm using letrozole right now to lower it. I don't know what's going on. Why could it be so high? He showed me his stack design. And of course, it had a bunch of trimbolone in there. It's like, yeah, we've seen it before. Trimbolone very well might cross react with estradiol, because for this guy, he had like pulled testosterone and everything. So he just totally wasn't getting it. And so what other compounds might be cross reacting? We don't have a full study list of everything that might happen with cross reactiveness. So there's that component too. So it just leaves you with a lack of reliability and accuracy if you're trying to go off purely your estradiol serum levels to say that is the sweet spot for you. What it really comes back to is, for one, needing to standardize everything. your drug usage, administration frequency, the labs you're using, to get tested, the time that you're trying to test these things. And then through that, your symptomology of where you feel the best. And that's really what we're mainly going off of. Even when we're coaching and trying to find ratios, is based a lot off subjective aspects. And we do have to then, we can relate them to a lab marker, an ultrasensitive estradiol test, if we've held all these variables constant, we can find like where someone might feel the best. However, we just brought up the point that we're in a constant flux of hormones, ups and downs and back again, right? To where like, what does that even mean? Like you find a sweet spot, it's still going to be changing. And so what you will have mapped out, I think, is going to be ranges of androgens and testosterone amount that will work together well for you. So like for myself, as an example, I know I could easily do 300 milligram testosterone without an AI and feel good. I know in a growth phase, I'll need to raise up my masculine level quite a bit to handle more than that 300 milligram of testosterone. But I'll know like, hey, around the 700 mark and certain amount of masculine, I also feel really good. But going beyond that, I start to run into issues. So what are these issues you might be running into? And one of the biggest ones probably is going to be what people bring up is water retention. Mm-hmm. And we could skew that down with lowering testosterone. This also gets in the thing of like a lot of it's through the RAAS system driving mm-hmm. up water retention. So we're using like ARBs to counter that. But before you get into using another drug, you might just want to be, hey, looking at your blood pressure and also just lowering testosterone to not have to just add in more complexity with a, you know, polypharmacy type model. Uh-huh. Deep conversation there. But again, that's one of the issues you're going to run into. And then also we're going to hear about gyno, which yeah. all gyno is going to be is just playing to find the right ratios of estrogens to androgens. And so that's what we're going to be doing with that to try to handle that. It's not going to be needing to like smash down estrogen or pull your labs and see what estrogen is. And then, okay, now we can address estrogen. But also not letting someone get into the psychological aspect that, you know, just like, oh, my nipple feels a little sensitive, I need a lower estrogen, when that's not really the case. Those are like the two main issues that we always see, like, right, in the off season, like mm-hmm. water retention or gyno. Is there something else that is a major standout for when guys complain that they feel acne. Like they're not in the sweet spot?
Okay. Acne. Yeah. The acne is a big one that I'll see, but it's honestly, it's typically coinciding with one and two and just not reported when that's the case. Like one and two being primary and acne being the incidence that flip the trigger, and then you ask about one and two as far as like water retention and drawing a blank. Gyno. Yeah, gyno, Jesus. Water retention and gyno, and they're already having some of those symptomologies. It just hasn't been reported. So yeah, that's typically one and two that I'll see. But yeah, acne would be a third.
Yeah, and even with acne, like, do you have to think like estrogen causes acne? No.
It's still
a ratios that are important. Also, you see people that like post show, they'll have an acne flare up. Why? Hormonal fluctuations is yeah. probably the biggest one. Coming down from crazy high androgen load down to nothing, that could be part of the problem. There's lots of components around acne, so don't just jump straight to blaming the hormones.
No.
Likely it's still down to your total androgen load driving more inflammation at the skin level.
Yep.
Estrogen has a role in appetite too. Mm-hmm. So in like states of high calorie intake, it can suppress appetite, which if you had estrogen too high, you might notice that. Now, not to say like, hey, at some point in the off season, you might not be that hungry, and that doesn't mean you just lower estrogen. Could be a number of factors, but that is a thing. If we saw what we do see, if like the estrogen to testosterone ratio is really skewed high, you might have a greater propensity. Like when you're gaining body fat to partition towards more subcutaneous fat. That also doesn't mean lower estrogen more. Typically males using, we have more than enough androgen present. I'm always above estradiol. Really the more of the issue I think is estrogen being too low and having a greater partition of fat to visceral fat stores. So estrogen has a really protective role around that. So I wouldn't even go off of like body fat gain partitioning to how you should be managing estrogen. I really think for the most part, it's going to come down to gyno and water retention. And those are not always going to be focused on estrogen. So I think that's trying to dispel that myth. And you can tell us in the comments below if there's some area you want us to really hit on estrogen and gyno and water retention and managing that component. Ask us your questions and we could dive a little deeper then. Because I know it, when we say those things, it can be a bit confusing because it is complex. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times estrogen's been made to be the bad guy around water retention and gyno. And that's just, it's just not the case. It's a complex system that's occurring. And it's just not only estrogen that's around in that system.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I think from a coaching perspective, primarily getting feedback on that water retention and gyno-based symptoms would be the primary I'd be focusing on. Other ones cropping up, we're looking at a multitude of inputs, which would be then where we deep dive into one of those conversations of all those inputs that could be influencing it.
Yeah, I think
I agree. That covers it.
Yeah, I think that wraps it up, guys. So that's your three questions around estrogen and us tackling those. So again, leave your questions down below for us around managing estrogen. We can maybe bring up another episode if you deem that to be necessary for us, if we weren't clear in something. But anyway, thank you everyone for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.